When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everyone. Today's guest is my old friend, Duncan Redmonds, lead vocalist and drummer for the Hendon, England punk rock band, Snuff. Together, we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite single, Nick Northern, taken from their 1996 album, Demamasabi Bunk. Snuff is one of my favorite bands and one of my earliest punk rock influences. I learned a bunch of stuff about this song today, things I've always wanted to ask Duncan, but would stop short as to not completely fanboy on him. This song is awesome. It combines the band's love of soul and mixes it with a healthy dash of punk rock and a melancholy lyric about the one who got away, something we can all relate to. It wasn't surprising to hear that the band would cut the main tracks, drums, bass, and guitars live, and then do overdubs. You can hear that immediacy in the track. I always wondered what Nick Northern meant, too, and I won't spoil it here, but it's perfect and very British. But that's not surprising, though, as Snuff has always been very tongue-in-cheek, another reason why I love the band so much. So for all this and a Greek landlord gone mad, stick around. This is a good one. Duncan!
How's it going, Chris? You all right?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I've just had my bath and got spruced up, especially for the occasion.
I love it. I love it. And it's the afternoon over there for you right now. So you have afternoon bath.
Yeah. Well, I'm a gentleman of leisure when I'm not on tour. So I was actually running around all morning. So a quick bath just before I was going to get me dicky bow and suit and tie on Sunday best. Didn't quite get there, but never mind.
Nice. Well, you know, a lot of our listeners, Duncan, they were asking for you the past couple of years since we started this whole thing. And I had hit you up early on and you're just like, no, I'm not doing interviews right now. And a lot of people were like that during the pandemic. They just kind of shut off. But you actually hit me up a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I'd like to talk to you. And I was elated. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you as well. Yeah, no, I tend to shy away from interviews, to be honest. I find them a bit stressful sometimes. It's kind of more nervy than I'm comfortable with, so I shy away from it. But I've kind of had a different change of plan, a little bit of education. So I'm trying to embrace it.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I did all the heavy lifting for us here. So we're just gonna comb through the song Nick Northern today. We'll get into that in a minute. But I just want to give everyone a little background, you know, and I know you know this, Duncan, but in 1990, I was given a cassette and it just said Snuff, nothing else. And the flip side of it was the second record from the Goo Goo Dolls. And at the time, the Goo Goo Dolls were playing punk rock. And I had this cassette that I pretty much wore out. And, you know, there was no Google to just be like, who's this band? I didn't know anything about it. I just knew the songs. And it was unlike anything I'd ever heard. I kind of gathered it was English by the accents and some of the in-between songs, the weird stuff that you guys would do. And that record was called Snuff Said. In 1993, I was on a spring break up in Philadelphia. Duncan, I had looked for this CD, this record, for 3 years, okay? And I'm in this record store. This is probably, I'm not even kidding you, probably the 100th record store I had walked in. All over Florida, I'd been combing record stores. I had been trying to find an import airport, couldn't find it. And I'm in Philly. I walk in and there's a clerk behind the counter. And I said, how you doing? He says, great. I said, I'm looking for this. It's obscure. It's a record by a band called Snuff. He said, Snuff. He says, I just got a CD in, a used CD the other day. He goes, go look over there. And I went, and I said, okay. And I've had this happen before. And I've walked over and it's not the right band or whatever. And I look, and I turn the record over and I start seeing the song titles, not listening somehow. And I'm like, oh, this is the band. This is the band. I plopped down the $10 or whatever for it. And I finally had the record. And it wasn't long after that, that I found out that the band had gotten back together. I didn't even know you broke up. In between that, you did another record called Guns and Wankers. And I'm in a record store in Gainesville one day, thumbing through, and that voice comes over the PA, that unmistakable voice of Duncan. I'm like, who is this? So the guy's like, it's a band called Guns and Wankers. I'm like, it's gotta be Duncan. I got the record, of course it was. And before I get too much more long-winded, I want to say one more thing to you. Doing this episode after almost 30 years, 33 years of knowing of your band, I found out something, Duncan, that I'm really, really happy about. I did not know on February 20th of 1996, when you played Janice Landing with No Effects, okay? And it was for this record that Nick Northern is on, Demasibibunk.
Demasibibunk, yeah.
Demasibibunk, which we'll get to that story later too, which is hilarious.
Okay.
But I didn't realize that I saw Andy that night on bass. He was with you then.
Yeah, Andy was on bass that. If it was 96, it would have been Loz on guitar, Andy on bass. Was the mod with us on keyboards?
Well, now, when I went back to YouTube and I looked at videos from that time period, yes, he was on that. Now, I didn't see one from Janice Landing where you played in Florida, but there was another video and Lee the mod was there. I didn't think Lee joined you till the 2000s. So I'm learning stuff now. I can't believe that I'm just now figuring out. But Andy Crichton, we lost Andy in, I believe, 99. He passed away.
Yeah, boo hoo.
Yeah. And he was the original bassist and Snuff, but I just assumed that I saw Lee, who had taken over around a little bit after that. But that was really cool for me to be able to know that I saw somebody from the original lineup. And you know, your band changed my life. They have a trombone in the band, which that was a huge thing for Less Than Jake. We're like, wow, they're playing punk rock. They're not really doing the ska thing, but they have horns. And that's when we decided, to get the horn section. But take us back, if you can. You did the Guns and Wankers project, and then all of a sudden you decide to get Snuff back together. Were you approached by Fat Mike, or was this already in the wheels in motion for this reunion?
It was already in motion. We split up 91. It was all getting a bit ratty. Then I went off and did Guns and Wankers. And then that sort of went for a few years, but people weren't quite getting Guns and Wankers. It was sort of hard work. It was getting there, but not really catching. So that kind of just sort of tailed off in a way. And then I started doing something with Cy, original guitarist, again. And we asked Andy, but I didn't think he was going to join. He was living up north. It was sort of like, will Andy do it? I don't think he will, but might as well ask. And then he said, yeah, all right. So the original lineup was back together. For about a year, the original lineup was together. Then Cy left. And then Loz came in. But Fat Mike was involved in it because we weren't going to call it Snuff. We were going to call it something else. We thought, let's just make a break and do other stuff. And I wanted to add trombone had been in the band since like 89, 90, but that was kind of part-time where he could turn up. So that wasn't full-time, but he was there when it was, when he could. But I wanted to add brass and keys full time. I wanted to make it a five piece. So we were just thinking, okay, let's make a break. And then Fat Mike came in and bribed us and said, well, you got to call it Snuff. I was like, nah. And he says, how about some filthy lucre? And we said, yeah, all right.
There you go. Money talks, right?
Yeah, it spoke to us and we were bribed and corrupted into doing it as snuff again. So it became snuff.
I've talked to him about your band till I'm blue in the face, and just we both feel the same thing. It's like you started in 86. I mean, you were right there during the whole punk scene, what was going on in England, but your sound was just, I mean, it was part Motown, part soul, but part, there was the Pistols in there. You could hear all these different, you know, and did it surprise you at all? You know, of course, Green Day and Offspring and Rancid were kind of hitting in America, but all of a sudden these bands are popping up and I'm going, they sound like Snuff, but I don't even know if they ever heard of Snuff. Like, you pioneered this sound.
It's nice of you to say that, but I'm sure there was a few bands around the world that were popping up with similar ideas. But I think the soul thing is definitely an influence. And all the punk thing, I was into punk as an early age, as a young teenager. Although I admit the punk records were at the back behind the heavy metal albums at the time, but you know, you could find the Clash and the X-Ray Specs at the back, and slowly the punk albums came to the front and the metal ones went to the back.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the metal records, that metal sounds a very, especially like, you know, all your records, but I remember the instrumental on Reach, that track, I was like, what is this? It's like you guys would break into stuff like that. It was just so cool.
Hellbound. Hellbound. Yeah, well, we brought in whatever influences we enjoyed playing. So there was like the original style punk, there was the thrash punk, which was more my era, to be honest. I had the, like I said, the Clash, Pistols, X-Ray Specs, etc. But then when I started hearing the likes of GBH and Discharge and Exploited, it was like, oh, now we're talking. Now we're talking. So that was sort of my mid-late teenage. That's my special time, because I was too young on the first wave. I was like 12 in 76, but I remember it all. I remember getting the first Clash album for Christmas and going, well, that's all right. Garageland's all right. But why don't they do some sort of bit heavier, be a bit heavier? And then they came out with Give Them Enough Rope, which I thought was brilliant. And all the punks said, no, it's too rock. And I was like, no, it's brilliant.
Well, I got to tell you, that time I saw you, and real quick, Dimamasa Bibunk was released on February 13th of 1996. It was 1 week later, Tuesday, February 20th, that I saw you. And I drove down from Gainesville. It was me, Roger, and Vinny, and I think our roadie Sean, right there in the front row. So I would have been right in front of Andy, because Laz was always on stage left at that point. And I'm sitting there, and I know that there was credits inside the records, but you were always changing your name. We were actually responsible, I think, for one of it, because you used to call your brother Dave Redmonds, who plays trombone, War Dave. And with your Cockney accents, we thought you were saying Gordy.
That's right. Yeah, Gordy.
I think in one of the records you put Gordy trombone. So I never knew people's names, the correlations of instruments. I'm looking and going, there's that voice sitting behind the drum set. Like, it's like the Phil Collins of punk rock.
Yeah, Wardiev. Actually, it's not actually Cockney. It's more like, it came from a Welshman, Wardiev. But up north, they'd say our Dave, our, you know, but it was kind of a Welsh accent. And that just stuck as a little name. But yes,
yeah.
Gordy. You lot kept calling him Gordy, so we just thought, okay, we'll join in. So he's Gordy. That's all right.
One more thing before, and I want to jump into the track, but you know, I grew up on a healthy dose of Benny Hill the young ones.
Right.
My grandfather loved Benny Hill and that English wacky slapstick humor. And I know that's one of the reasons Less Than Jake went down so well early on. You know, we were dressing up and doing this stuff and the UK crowds completely got us. But that was the other thing about your band that I loved is you could write very just great lyrics and melodies and heartfelt, but then you could break into a commercial, you know, or something ridiculous or just like a jingle that you would do. And I always loved that. And I took that with me. Our band took that with us and always tried to, you know, to have fun. That was paramount.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to make fun of yourself in a way. We never wanted to be that serious. We always wanted to have fun anyway.
Right.
We started off doing it for fun, purely. Of course, we wanted to be world famous superstars, but early on, we didn't actually think anyone would like it because no one was particularly into that at the time. It was all the UK punk scene had kind of gone from GBH Discharge into blast beats with Extreme Noise Terror and the likes, where it was all 500 miles an hour, double beats, all crusty, and there's very little sense of fun in it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like that stuff, but we kind of wanted to put some of the melody back into it and have a bit of fun, because I think one of the lessons of punk rock is you're just a punk on stage, you're nothing special. So it was like, try and give that feeling that we ain't anything special, really. We're just having a laugh, you know. It's not a
sure,
not a big egotistical thing going on here. We're having a laugh. So we tried to put that in. And I think it also helps when you've got a lighthearted moment, because it just changes it. It changes people's emotions. It's sort of and you mentioned adverts. If we did adverts, back then there was no internet. Everyone watched the same things.
Yeah.
So everyone knew all the adverts on telly because everyone saw it. So if you plugged into that public consciousness, everyone knew. It was like a little, they're being funny here, but this is still powerful, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. Yeah, we tried to put that in there, have a laugh and make it slightly lighthearted.
I love that. You know, I saw Faith No More before they became superstars, and same thing. They used to do the Nestle chocolate commercial live. And right. I'll never forget that. Like, they had this set, and they're coming out, and you think they're serious for the first three or four songs, and they bust into this. You're like, what's going on? And you're right. It's a mood changer. It's like, okay, everyone kind of lets their guard down. We don't all have to be tough guys here.
Yeah. And also just to make something happen different. We'd always try and do that. Even if it's just a little bit of banter with the crowd or some little joke song from the town they come from or whatever it is, some sort of connection there so that it makes it a bit more connected somehow.
Right. Well, you know, prolific is one word that comes to mind when I think of you. You've written so many great songs with Snuff, with Guns and Wankers, with Billy No Mates, your solo stuff that you do in Japan. But this track, Nick Northern, was it written for Demamasa Bibonk, or was it something that you had held over from Guns and Wankers or anything else?
It was written in the period when we got back together. It just came out. It actually came out of an old soul record in the UK. Like, there's a whole sort of soul scene called the Northern Soul scene, which is basically sounds like Motown, but the songs weren't hits. It's all the songs that never made it, but some of them are amazing. I don't know, understand how some of them weren't hits, but it's all the tracks that, you know, that didn't make it. Sounds like upbeat. Four Tops, it's that kind of stuff in general.
Yeah.
And I was always into that. I love me Scooters and I love me Northern Soul and the Soul and a bit of Scar. And so it kind of came out, it was plagiarized off an old Northern Soul record, which, to be honest, I don't even know what it was. I had it on cassette and it had this middle eight that just dropped down into it. And it was like, ooh, if I change that about a little bit. And then it came from that, adding the keys and the brass and his bass line walking all over the place, and then sort of soulful lyrics about, you know, broken hearted stuff. All the soul songs, it's always about broken hearts, or I'm in love, or you broke my heart, or etc., or I'm going to break your heart.
Is that where the title comes from, Nick Northern, because of the Northern Soul?
Yeah, so it came, Nick, if you nick something in English slang.
Oh, you steal it.
That's stealing, yeah. I nicked it. So it's basically nicked a Northern Soul vibe. So the riff isn't exactly the same, and one day I'll hear it again, or someone will go, that sounds like Nick Northern by Snuff. Yeah. And I go, what's the title? Because I only ever had it on cassette. I don't know what it was.
So right.
It wasn't a big song on the scene. It was a compilation CD that... basically Nick Northern stole soul music, basically.
That is so cool. I have no idea, and I've been listening to this song for 27 years now, 26 years, but 27 years, geez, I'm bad at math. You know, when I got the EP Flibbity Dibbity Dob from you guys, and same thing, I'm in a record store in Gainesville, I'm thumbing through, and I see this thing, it was an EP by Snuff, but it had like hearts or something and like clouds on the cover, and I'm like, this is probably some EDM band from Germany or something. And I turn it over and I'm like, so I plop down the $7 or $8 or whatever it was for it, and I get home and I put it in, and you did a cover of I Can See Clearly Now. I can see clearly now.
Right, that would be Reach.
Oh, that was Reach. Okay. Well, anyways, the EP had, I think, Soul Limbo. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Booker T and the MGs cover.
And when you guys would break into stuff like that live, and I got to, again, relive that when I watched that video from 96 last night. And I remember, I hadn't thought of this since that show I saw you in Florida, but I remember the crowd changing when you went into that song. You played four songs, and then when you go into Soul Limbo, now everyone's, you know, you hit them with that. They reacted to that. There's something about that groove when you guys go into it that's powerful.
Yeah, well, it does. Yeah, we kind of put an African style rhythm on it. I mean, the original Soul Limbo is kind of funky, shuffly, kind of changed it a little bit, but yeah, when the crowds love that as a live song, all of a sudden people lighten up and go, all right, we'll have a little dance now, here we go.
Right. Yeah, well, and this song has always reminded me of that song, but they're light years from each other. Way different feel with the guitar in Nick Northern. It's not as danceable as that one, but I still get that soul vibe.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, soul and mod. I was influenced by that since, I don't know, up until I was 15, or probably only 14, 15. It was 80% rock, 20% punk.
Yeah.
Then I moved to London when I was 17, and then I started hearing other stuff I'd never heard before, all this mod stuff and Small Faces and Booker T and the MGs. It was like, oh, what's this? What's this? What's this? And also the Motown stuff. I'd heard a few things before. I remember my Auntie Barbara brought round a Motown compilation when I was a young'un. It was like, wow, what's this? What's this? What's this?
Yeah. It's that double snare beat of Motown that just translated so well to punk rock.
Yeah, you know? Four on the floor, bam, 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 bam.
Get that tambourine with it and we got a party.
Yeah, tambourine, some lovely backing vocals, harmonies, lyrics that, you know, kind of hits. Everyone's been brokenhearted or fallen in love sometimes, so somehow that's going to hit people.
Yeah, it's going to translate. Well, I want to jump into the track. It's 3 minutes and 16 seconds, Duncan. We got a cool little snare and tom fill. Right at the end of that fill, we get a slide in from the organ, followed by 16 bars of drums, bass. Are these stereo guitars, or am I hearing one guitar slightly panned right that's maybe doubled?
To be honest, I can't remember. But it would, if it's Loz played on this, he tends to double stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like a double, but it doesn't sound like a true stereo double to me. It sounds like it's kind of panned off, maybe two guitars kind of in the same spot, panned off to the right a little bit.
To be honest, I can't quite remember. But I do know that we recorded it in Lincolnshire, in the studio, And we released it on Deceptive in the UK and on Fat in America. And the two mixes are slightly different.
Yes.
I know that half the mixes Fat Mike left and half of them he changed. I can't remember if he changed this one or not. So
I think he did, because Nick Northern was featured on Survival of the Fattest, a comp released in March of 96. Fat Records used to put these comps out. And that was one of the reasons we picked this song. I know a lot of people know it. Those comps sold a lot back then. That was how you found out about your new music. So I believe this was a remix by Ryan Green.
Okay. Well, you probably know better than me. If it wasn't Ryan Green, then it was Mitchy.
Did you guys record live off the floor and just overdub vocals and maybe a guitar part or something? Or how did you do it back then?
Back then and now, pretty much, we'll always record guitar, bass and drums live with a guide vocal and then add to it later. We try to do it live, no clicks. We did do clicks on one album, but on most of one album, but I didn't like it. It was like, we'll try it. And we tried it, but I'll try and get it live so that the song moves about a little bit without you knowing. It gives it a bit of life, I think.
Well, I'll tell you something, that what you just described is what you guys sound like live. You've always sounded like you do on record. I mean, and that's great for a punk band. Those guitars are super chunky here at the top. I'm just going to call them stereo guitars here on out. And they have the syncopated rhythm. And the organ is here as well. And at the very end, we hear a two-note trombone slide into verse one. Where's the love you took from me? How am I supposed to carry on? Where's the love you took from me? How am I supposed to carry on? Just emptiness inside of me, where the flame of love once burned so strong.
Yeah, Nick Motown is nicking that idea of emotional lyrics about love. It came from an old failed relationship. It was.
You just said Nick Motown, which was on the next record.
Oh, you meant Nick Northern. I've done that more than once live. People say, "Let's do Nick Motown," and I go into Nick Northern. It's like, oh.
So I'm assuming Nick Motown. You were nicking the Motown sound with that one.
Yes.
I love it. I had no idea, man. This is so cool. Okay. Was this lyric about anybody in particular, a love interest, or were you just writing?
It was, yeah. And like I said, an old relationship that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say who.
Okay.
But
fair enough.
It was an old love that fell apart, and it hurt bad.
Yeah, as it does. How do you typically write for this song, if you can recall? Do you have like a notebook that you jot down lyrics and you can just go and reference that, or do you write for the track that's specific for that track when you're writing it?
Most of the time, it comes from the melody first. I'll get a melody, and then I'll start fitting words around the melody. So the song is formed or half formed, get the melody and then start seeing what to hook onto it. And it might just come from one. I might have a few lines. I do jot some stuff down every day. I'll write something every day, even if it's just one line. It's like, oh, hang on, that little soundbite sounded good. Whatever it is, click, clack, or whatever. It's like, oh, write that down. Well, these days, record it on my phone and voice memos. But
yeah,
I've always got a portfolio, shall I say, of unused lyrics. But it's extremely rare that I write a lyric and then fit a song to it.
Right.
It has happened a few times, but it's very rare. Normally, it's the other way around. I'll get the song up, get a melody, and see what it's suggesting, and then start putting things on top of it.
You know, something I don't think I've ever talked about on this show, I want to ask you. You know, I've come up with what I think are really great melody lines, and I'll have them in my voice memo on my phone or something, and then I go to put words to it, and it changes the melody. I can't find the right words and syllables to make that melody flow.
It is very hard, because the melody is, it's what makes it work.
Right.
In a big way. And yes, and trying to fit words to melodies can be absolutely infuriating because, like you said, if you change it, if you've got a song going da 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 da, that's the melody in your head. It's like, right, I got to think of words. And that don't fit. That's a hard syllable. I don't want that. It's like, no, that doesn't sound anything like da 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 da.
Try doing it most of your career when you had a drummer that wrote the lyrics. So you'd sit there and you'd be getting to the chorus. You're like, I know the word is find. I know that's what you want to say, but it's got to be two syllables. The melody doesn't work. And oh man, you want to talk about the rows we'd get into. It was just, you know, because he wants his lyrics to be what he wants them to say. I get that, you know, but if it doesn't work melody wise and it's killing the melody, which one do you pick?
Yeah, it's hard. It is hard. And then if you do have to change it, it can change. I sympathize with that. If you change a word in a sentence, it can make a massive difference because it might not have the same meaning as before.
But
fitting that all in and still making it mean something good and fit the melody. I know that Elton, is it? No, not Burt Bacharach. He writes the songs and the melodies. And then, used to, he's dead now, isn't he, I think. Then he would send it off and someone else would write the words. They would have to fit the words to it exactly.
Oh,
and I think with Elton John, that's what he does. He just goes, right, I got this song. It goes, la, 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 la. Another bloke writes the lyrics. So it is. That's the hardest part, getting the lyrics to fit and still make sense and hopefully mean something that touches someone, be it in a good way or an angry way or whatever way. It can be a bastard getting the lyrics sorted.
yes, it can. Well, this verse one, the progression continues over from the intro. We get organ swells and a two-noter from the trombone after the first three lines. That happens each time. On the last line, where the flame of love once burned so strong, at the end of the lyric, the organ swells and we get a roar from one of the guitars that takes us into chorus one. The bass guitar here, the tone and what Andy's playing is absolutely killer. It's its own song within the song.
He was a genius on the bass. He was. He was a brilliant bassist. And I think you said it, you hit it on the head there. He would be playing his own song. It's a rhythm instrument, but he's got to pick out the melody. So he's got to be bass should be halfway between the drummer and the song, playing their own song that's adding to, not taking away. So, and Andy had that down. He was brilliant. In fact, I do remember one time we were recording an EP for Japan, and it was a little snippet of a song. It was just kind of a little moddy thing, not pretty similar in rhythm to Nick Norvin, sorry. So I've done it again. And we were recording it and mixing it, and it all sounded great. And then we soloed the bass, and it just sounded like he was playing a different song completely.
Right.
It was like, well, that's... Is that what you're doing, Andy? Yeah. It's sort of like, but it's a different song. It sounds, what? And then you put the whole song in again and it fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you soloed it, it was like, where is he going with that? But when put into the whole mix, it just builds the whole thing into something bigger.
Right. And you get some of those people that, you know, I've had friends or, you know, there aren't really musicians say, I don't really know what bass is. I can't really hear it in the mix. They can't discern. Their ears don't go there. And I always tell them that the difference is that the song sounds good with a good bassist. And what I mean by that, I can get around on the bass, but if I were to go play Nick Northern, it would sound like me following the root notes. And what Andy's doing is an art form. That therein lies the difference.
Yeah. Well, he was a big on like old reggae stuff and ska stuff, but he also liked Killing Joke, The Stranglers, darker sort of moody stuff.
You can hear that on the first couple records for sure. Out of verse one, we get into chorus one. Where'd it go, that burning flame of love? Where has it gone? How am I supposed to carry on?
Yeah, well, that's just me being brokenhearted, isn't it? It's just like, It's me. Yeah, boohoo. I do joke about soul singers. They're always moaning, isn't they, soul singers? Oh, I've got a broken heart. It's like, oh, yeah, shut up, get on with it. I'm joking. You know I'm joking. But
have you ever felt, though, that pain, that heartache as songwriters, is that what gives us our best stuff? We've heard that before, and I feel that that's true a lot of the times.
I think that's true, yeah. It's kind of, in a way, it's therapy, getting stuff mm-hmm. out. Getting hurt out or getting anger out. You can connect with that when you hear someone else. I remember as a kid listening to Rod Stewart with the stuff like You Wear It Well and Wake Up Maggie. I mean, I was a little tiny little virgin, but in my head, I knew exactly what he was talking about without knowing. It was kind of like just identifying with it. And you can tell if someone means it, you can feel it. It's like, it's not manufactured. It's meant. Even if they're singing someone else's song in a way that touches them, you can feel it.
You just took the words out of my mouth. How many times has there been a song written and covered by two or three artists, but it isn't until, you know, the one artist covers it and they sell it emotionally. That yeah. selling of the song is, you have to feel it. And that comes, I've always said, those emotions, that spirituality, it comes through the microphone.
Yeah, people can feel it, I think. They know if you mean it or not.
Hey everybody, we got to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, but we'll be right back with lots more with Duncan Redmonds.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, I hope you're all enjoying today's episode of Krista Makes a Podcast. It's listeners like you who keep us going strong. And the most impactful way to help us keep this show going is to head to KristaMakes.com and sign up for our supporting cast. You'll get weekly bonus episodes of The After Party, where we do fun episodes about music history, classic albums, tour stories, trivia, and everything else you can imagine. Plus, there's an enormous back catalog of these episodes, so we can keep you laughing and learning for a really long time. So yeah, for the cost of buying us a drink because you enjoy Krista Makes a Podcast, you can help us continue to create episodes with all of your favorite artists. Just head to KristaMakes.com to sign up, and from the bottom of our hearts, thanks for listening to the show. And now, back to the show.
Well, the chorus comes quick, man. It's 32 seconds. We're already at the chorus hook. The guitars go to full strum here. The organ and the trombone sit perfectly underneath the vocal. Is the vocal doubled in the chorus? It doesn't sound like it in the verse, but it sounds like it could be doubled in the chorus.
Again, it's so long ago, I can't remember, to be honest. But it probably is. There is a harmony on the back, which is... I say a harmony, I think it might just be another voice doubling up what I do.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because later in the song, I hear, and a lot of times you'll do a unison vocal, but a couple of the words will have a harmony. So there'll be a little rub, which is cool, and I think that's what goes on here later in the song.
Right, but I would sometimes double track. I've gone backwards and forwards on double tracking, because it does sound better and stronger, but sometimes it just makes it a little bit flatter without... the voice being fully felt. So I'm kind of 50-50 on that. I did go all the way the other way at one point, and I was like double, treble, you know, and it was like once you layer it all up, you get a perfect note, but it kind of goes a bit flat. Again, it's back to that. You want it to be a little bit wrong in a good way because the ear hears that. When it's all perfect, auto-tuned, absolutely perfect, your ear kind of turns off and goes, that's good, but if someone can sing it with feeling, and like I say, just get it slightly wrong and
yeah.
slightly waver about, it gives it a bit more weight, I think. So I'm back to just doing single takes now.
Yeah, I totally get that. And sometimes it's the little imperfections that make it feel real and
exactly,
you know, perk your ear up, as you said. Verse two comes right off the heels of chorus one.
No more tenderness. What happened to the love we said?
Is it no more the tenderness or too tenderness?
No more the tenderness. Hang on, I've got to remember now. I should have done my homework, shouldn't I?
Well, I found no more the tenderness.
I'm left with emptiness, innit? I'm left with emptiness. Hang on. I'd have to sing the whole song. Yeah. So no more the tenderness, I think it is, but I might look it up later.
Be wrong. Well, that's where we're going to go with no more the tenderness. What happened to the love we shared? No more the warm caress, just emptiness and despair. And if you just read these just verbatim, not even that it's a song, just words. I mean, who hasn't felt that?
Yeah. I think everyone's had love in their life somehow, good and bad, and it brings you joy. And then when it goes wrong, I think it's one of the most painful things that can happen. Okay, it's not like breaking your leg and being in that sort of pain, but emotional pain, it just destroys you. Yeah, you just let nothing works. Nothing. You know, you could be standing there when, I always think when you're in love, you could be looking at a puddle in a lorry park in Reading, and you go, that's the most wonderful puddle in the world. And when you're brokenhearted, you could be standing at the top of the Alps with a beautiful panoramic view, and it means shit. It's just like nothing hits. And it just destroys you. It just lays you completely, you know, lays you to waste. It's just, it hurts.
I was going through a breakup, and I stood there front of house by the soundboard at the London Astoria watching Slayer. This would have been back around 2001, 2002. Never seen the band, was totally pumped. And I don't remember anything of the show. I just remember being upset the whole time.
Yeah. Well, it colors everything, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah. Here I am, a dream gig. I've wanted to see this band since I was 15 years old, and all I could think about is her.
Yeah. It's so destroying. It is. Your body just gets obsessed with something and it's gone, and then it's like, oh fuck.
I know. Well, verse two, the band breaks down for the whole verse, pretty much the same instrumentation as verse one, but I only hear a one noter from the trombone after line one. Then it's just organ, and the organ parts here are different from verse one. So you know, this wasn't done to Pro Tools copy and paste. So this was just you guys kind of riffing. You know, did you ever say, hey, you know, Dave, why aren't you playing the trombone every time? Or was it there and it wasn't mixed in? Or how'd that come about? I found that very interesting. I never realized it till I analyzed the song.
To be honest, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was, it's before Pro Tools. Although it was done on 2-inch, so you could still drop in. We would normally just work through the songs and then people would get to there where they felt comfortable, and that was it. We'd try and record it like that live.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because verse one's busier than verse two. It's not like, you know, this completely noticeable thing, but you know, breaking it down and analyzing it like this, I thought that was interesting.
To be honest, I'm sorry, I haven't done my homework. I should have listened to the track and got all their memories back, because if I do it live, I'll just go into it and it'll come out, but I've got to start from the beginning.
Another artist doesn't sit around listening to themselves. How weird.
Yeah, not often. Not often.
Yeah, exactly. I don't drive down the road listening to less than Jake very often, unless we get a new mix and I have to test it in the car, right?
Yeah.
The other thing here at the last line, just emptiness and despair, that the guitar did in verse one is now the organ doing it. The guitar's not doing it there. And again, that's just the way it went down. No one said, hey, Laz, get in there and make that guitar part happen again.
It probably would have happened in rehearsals and we'd have got stuck with it. I mean, the wonderful thing about Hammond is the whole is half a percussive instrument.
It is.
In the way that you make it swell, you've got this wow, and then you've got the Leslie kicking in and all of that sort of stuff.
And it does this kind of pre-delay thing almost where you think you're hearing stuff. I mean, I used to listen to Who records, I'm sure you did, where you'd be in headphones, you'd be like, what is this? And it was the Leslie like swirling around, you know, and it would do these, it would almost make you think you're hearing voices.
Yeah. And well, I did just ring an old bell there, because it was when we were doing the songs, this song in particular, working it through. And like you said, sometimes you can just hear something that's there already, but it's not actually being played. So it was kind of copying, I can hear this, even though it's not there. And it's something in the notes, the way they're working together, the bass and the guitar are doing different things. It's suggesting a note. So you can almost hear stuff when it isn't even there. It can be suggested and you'll hear it. And it's like, oh, that's not on there yet. Gotcha, or whatever.
Yeah.
So it is trying to pick out the things that are happening already, I think, and reinforcing that.
Absolutely. Well, verse two goes right into chorus two. We get the same lyrics as chorus one. Where'd it go? That burning flame of love. Where has it gone? How am I supposed to carry on? Same overall instrumentation as chorus one, but the trombone is mixed noticeably louder than chorus one. I thought that was interesting, and I think it's kind of cool. As the song goes on, it's lifting. Do you recall that being a part of the conversation or that happening?
I don't recall that actual particular thing, but it is a general thing to try and build up the song so that it gets louder and louder towards the end, so that the song hits harder. Because the ear, once you hear it from the off, it'll, if it's all the same level, it'll just be flat. So you do want to drop down in the verse and come up for the chorus and then down again and up, so that it builds that excitement, builds the dynamics of it, whatever.
And it's funny because I've listened to this song, I don't know how many times over throughout the years, I never noticed that second chorus. The trombone comes up. It was cool to be able to, you know, learn something about one of your favorite songs.
I guess I've got to say credit to the people that were mixing it. Whether it was Ryan Green or Mitty version in the end, they're going to know what they're doing as well and think, right, we're going to have to build that. Then we, you know, take that back, then build it up again. But it is a general songwriting thing, isn't it? To get it up and down as best you can.
Yeah, those dynamics are, again, what can ultimately make or break or sell the song. Quite possibly my favorite part of the song is the post-chorus, I'm calling it. Now I see my dreams burn before my eyes. I see my dreams burn before my eyes. And the second burn before my eyes, to our conversation a moment ago, I can't tell if there's a harmony here, Duncan, or if what the organ is doing makes it sound like a harmony there. It's crazy.
There is a harmony. I think there is a harmony in there, but burn before my eyes, burn before my eyes. Yeah. There would be a harmony. It might have been mixed quietly.
The organ's doing something there too that's kind of messing with me. And I rewound that part.
It could be that as well. It could just be that it's suggesting something and you're hearing stuff that may not be there, but as a whole, it's doing something. But there is a harmony on that.
I love it. And I've always, I've told you this, I've always loved your drumming and the dynamics that you bring to the band. And this section right here, this post-chorus, the whole band gets louder dynamically, especially that crash cymbal. You're just banging on this post-chorus part. Absolutely love it. And then we get into the musical interlude, or a bridge if you want, with no lyrics. And I absolutely love this part. The first eight bars are that chug guitar. Jigga, 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 jigga. It's awesome. Halfway through, bass guitar and drum hits. Dun, dun. On bar seven, that drum fill from the top of the song happens again, followed by a whole band reintro for a 24-bar organ solo. And you know, Lee, okay, the keyboardist in Snuff, he can play anything. The guy is awesome. This is a pretty reserved organ solo. You know, it's not super flashy, but it fits the part.
Yeah, yeah, he's done really well there, I think. I love what he did on that. His little tiny little trills, keeping the gaps, and then getting it moving, a little bit more complicated. It builds into a lovely little, that's a lovely little solo. It's delightful.
It's awesome, but there is definitely more room for him to move around in there. But that space is what makes it interesting for me. And that's blues, Motown, soul. They would always give that space. And that this part of the song is great. I think that this sets up the rest of the song perfectly. It gives you this kind of a lull. But again, he didn't overdo it. He played what I think is perfect.
Yeah. I think you said it with, he's kept the space, keep the space in it so that it can be tempting often to overfill things. And then the space is lost. It's the space that's making the dynamic. So, I mean, he's obviously influenced by lots of similar, you know, he's the mod, he's not called the mod for no reason. He loves all the old mod stuff, you know? So he's obviously influenced by all that as well.
If anybody has ever seen Lee, they know what Duncan means by mod. I mean, he looks like he's walked out of a 1975 party, full leisure suit. Sometimes his hair, his chops, his sideburns, the whole look, it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, 64, maybe 68, 64.
Yeah, 68. 75 is a little late. Yeah.
That's a little bit late. I mean, the mod rerun. And that was one of the notes I was asking Loz, am I right about this? Did we record this here at that time? Anything else you remember? And he said, yeah. Lee was wearing a really loud shirt.
That's so awesome. Well, verse 3. I'm left with yesterday. I'm left with yesterday, left with trouble on my mind. No more the warm caress, just emptiness and despair. So you're echoing what you're feeling from earlier.
Poor little broken-hearted Duncan, that's what it was. I mean, the relationship was a few years before, to be honest, but it was, it still resonated. It was still there. Still there a bit now. I still talk to her. We're friends now, but it was at the time, I was just devastated.
Isn't that funny how sometimes you can take yourself down that rabbit hole of you just be driving down the road and an ex will pop in your head and I have to like sometimes get myself out of it because you'll start going down those feelings again. Like, wait a second, this is in the past. Why am I thinking about this? Yeah, why am I thinking about this at the stoplight? This makes no sense.
Mm. Well, it can take years for a relationship, pain of a relationship to disappear, can't it? Sometimes you're over it in a few days. It's like, oh, I've met someone else. Oh, who? Oh, that old girl. I've got a new girlfriend, so it's fine. Other times, it's just hangs in there, sort of like, oh, if only.
Exactly. The last line, just emptiness and despair. We get a huge, the loudest one in the song, on the guitars coming there. It's awesome. And chorus. And despair! Where'd it go, that burning flame of love? Where is it gone? How am I supposed to carry on? Did you think about maybe third chorus? Sometimes you want to get a different line in there, some more information, or did you always have it pretty much the same?
With that one, I think I just kept it the same, just repeated it. Sometimes I just can't find anything else that'll fit. But I think it was just reinforced what I'd already got on. That's the, you know, just reinforce it. Go with that.
Fair enough. Well, the post-chorus comes right on the heels. Again, same lyric as the first time. Now I see my dreams burn before my eyes. I see my dreams burn before my eyes. Love that lyric. And then we get into the outro here. We get double time on the snare. And there's a couple words in here I'm going to try to decipher with you. Well, I've never known.
I'm kind of dreading this bit because at the time, I did just shout out what was in my head. It was kind of like, and I wouldn't, I never quite settled on it.
I always thought this part was maybe ad-libbed.
It was a bit ad-lib, yeah. It was like, I've got an idea, my dreams, my heart, belief. What am I, you know, I was just kind of going, right, this is what comes out, here we go. So what's on the record is not quite what we do live anymore. It was kind of just shout it out. Go on, tell me what you think it is, and then maybe I'll nick that and do it.
Well, okay, yeah. The next song will be called Nick Chris. My love, my love, my dreams, believe. My love, my dreams, just down to one.
Just how do I carry on?
Yeah, carry on. I swear, tears are just burning away.
My tears are just burning away. Yeah, well, it's a mixture of my hope, my heart, my dreams, belief, my love, my life, just how do I carry on? I think that's what I've ended up doing these days.
Okay.
But yeah, you stick with whatever you like. I still sing the lyrics to the first Clash album completely different to what they actually are. So it doesn't matter.
As you should.
Yeah. If you know the words to the first Clash album, then it's sort of like, what? You cheated.
Yeah. You're not a real fan. The whole band hits together here at the end. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then, then the whole band fades away as you mostly hear the trombone and the organ sizzle out. And I got to ask you, were you doing demos at this time, like on a 4-track or anything, on just a simple tape recorder? Or did you just go into your rehearsal space, you guys would rehearse and jam, and then you just go record the songs?
We did demo the whole album up in 95. We signed to EMI. And they had demo studios. So there is a whole version of it in demo.
No kidding. Okay.
It is about somewhere. It came out when Demo Must Be Bonk was re-released. It was a little limited edition thing. We made up a few hundred CDs of it. So there is a whole demo version of it. So yes, the answer is yes. We demoed it in London.
Now, am I remembering, before we break here, Duncan, am I remembering the title of the record, the story behind it? I want to say it's like the store just down the road from you where you'd get your cigarettes or something. The guy behind the counter, he may have been an Indian fella or something, and his accent, he said they must be punk?
No. Well, you're kind of on the right track. It was an old landlord. I was living in a bedsit in Tufnell Park, and he was Greek.
Okay.
It was a Greek landlord, and he was saying they must be mad. A strong Greek accent, they'll add noises where there aren't noises, or take noises off. Kettle becomes a kettle, organ becomes an org. So it was sort of, they must be mad. It was him saying they must be mad. Demo Must Be Bonk. Bonkers. He just took the end off bonkers.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
So they must be bonkers in a very, very strong Greek accent. That's what it is.
Well, I've always loved your titles. That's been another thing that drew me to your band, the wacky titles. Speaking of wacky titles, you guys have had 8 more studio albums since the release of Demo Must Be Bonk, the newest being, and I'm going to try this, Duncan, I'm going to try.
Go on then.
Crepuscolo Dorato della Bruschetta, Borsetta, Calzetta, Cacetta, Trombetta, Lambretta, Giallo Ossido o Così Magnifico.
Yeah, well done. Magnifico, magnifico.
That's the latest record in 2022. And as we leave here, first of all, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to see you, to hear your voice. What's coming up in the world of Duncan Redmond's and Snuff?
Snuff at the minute, we've got another album that we're finishing off. If it looks at the calendar, in 3 weeks, we're finishing off an album, whether it's done or not. So there might be some on the spur of the moment lyrics on a couple of the songs, but it's almost finished. It's got a few acoustic songs on it. We've started doing acoustic. There's an acoustic album out as well, which isn't everyone's cup of tea, but it's fun to do. And it came out of a happy accident
Cool.
So there's a new album coming. We've got a few dates. We're off to Germany. We've got a few UK dates, but I think we'll probably be doing a proper tour in next spring with the new album, with little gigs put in here and there. We always have a snuff club, we call it. Every Thursday, assuming everyone's about, then we get together and talk shit and make a noise. So snuff club's always ongoing. Just depends on when we can get everyone in the same place and go off on tour.
I hear that loud and clear. And how's your three girls doing?
Four.
Four girls. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. You have four. And I was, and your wife makes five. I don't know how you do it.
The wife makes five, dog makes six. I'm surrounded by bitches.
And your daughter, I mean, I saw one of them last time. I couldn't believe how old she was. They got to all be close to 20, right? Or older?
Yeah. Youngest is 18. So there's only two at home now. My eldest daughter is heading for 30. Which just does not make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. I'm not even 30. How can she be 30?
Exactly.
So yeah, no, there's two at home, and they're at university, and 18 and 20. So most of the time it's headphones in and morning. What?
Yeah.
They turn off the old iPods. What? I was just saying good morning. Like, oh, and then, you know, but we have a good laugh, and they ignore me. And that's part of being a teenager, a young person, isn't it? So don't do this, don't do that. But you did it all, Dad. Yeah, I know, but I'm telling you not to.
Well, give my best to the missus, okay?
I will. Yeah, no. So yeah, I'll go right downstairs and pass on the love.
All right. And the rest of the lads too, man. Thank you so much. I love you, man. Thank you.
Nice one, Chris. Yeah. And say hello to the chaps.
We've been wanting to make that episode happen for a long time, and I'm glad it finally did. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with Duncan Redmonds, but don't go anywhere. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA Podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others. Photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici. And I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Borrowed Sparks, an Americana punk rock band from St. Louis, Missouri. Their latest record is called Let a Little Light In. You can listen to their music on Spotify. Here's a snippet of that title track, Let a Little Light In.
The North Star fades, and glory days. Well, they burned out at dawn. There's a golden hour, a red sun rising. Gotta let that North Star fade. What you want is new horizons.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Chris, I thought that was a really great episode. I've always loved that song, especially from Snuff. Now, I'm from the generation that came up with the Fat Records comps. You know, those Fat Records comps, those were like albums in themselves. Like, you know, I had to have those things memorized from start to finish. And Nick Northern was such a different track from everything else on there. It had that Motown feel that you brought up, which I guess was actually Northern Soul in England. That's what they were nicking there. I didn't know nicking meant stealing. I thought that was a really cool little tidbit from this episode too.
Hey, he nicked me wallet. You know, someone stole my wallet. Yeah, that's definitely very English. I had no idea that's what the title was referencing. Something I told him. Here it is, 27 years later. Huge fan of the song, and I'm learning stuff about it. And man, I had to reel myself in when we started here. I've told Duncan many a night years ago. And I remember one day waking up and the guys are like, dude, you cornered Duncan last night when you had a few too many beers. You know, I mean, I would super fan on this guy. They were my band. You know, nobody knew who Snuff was back in 1991. They were just this, I didn't even know who they were. I just had this worn out cassette that I played a billion times. And that's why we got into punk rock. It was, it wasn't for the masses. It wasn't on TV. It was, you know, you had a personal connection to that band. And oh my gosh, I gave a little bit of the backstory with them, but I could have went on about that for an hour. Just, you know, I'm still a super fan.
Yeah. Hey, I still have the flyer from when Less Than Jake played at Club Laga in Pittsburgh with Snuff opening.
Yes, Snuff and all.
Yep. I still have that flyer. What a show. Wow.
It was. And Snuff had flown over. That was the fall of 1998. They had flown over. Their first show was in Roanoke, Virginia, of all places. And they had never seen Less Than Jake. We had never met them before. You know, I'd only seen the band 2 years prior, but I didn't meet them or anything. And I'll never forget Duncan telling the story. Like, that's when we'd invite audience members up. We'd have 10, 12 people in masks and costumes running around, throwing stuff in the audience, jumping off speakers. And he's like, what did I just witness? He was like, it was like the Jim Rose circus show mixed with like a, you know, a ska punk band, you know. And we hit it off with them immediately and built just a wonderful, wonderful friendship.
Hey, I think that it was kind of not talked about that much that Duncan is a singing drummer. He's a lead singer drummer. I mean, that's pretty rare. I know Jellyfish had that. And once in a while you'd see, like, I went and saw the Eagles play and Don Henley did that a little bit. Maybe you saw Phil Collins do it once in a while. But yeah, you don't see that very often. I feel like that was kind of glossed over in the episode. The amount of coordination that it takes just to play drums. I mean, I'm impressed by drummers to begin with. Now add singing lead on top of that, it's kind of a feat.
It is. And again, I didn't know anything about the band. You know, we didn't have Google at our disposal in 1996, and I go see them play and I was just as amazed. I'm like, that voice, that insane, crazy voice is coming from behind the drum set. That voice I've been listening to at that point for 6 years. And I finally got to see the band and see him. Yeah, he's phenomenal. His drumming is incredible. And I can't play drums, let alone even think about singing and playing drums at the same time.
Yeah. Hey, that Motown / Northern Soul influence is so apparent in their music. They even did a cover of the Four Tops song, Standing in the Shadows of Love. And it's those minor key Motown songs that have that sort of dark feel. That's kind of what Snuff sounds like. That's such a perfect cover for them to do. It makes so much sense the way it lends itself to Snuff's sound, you know?
Absolutely. Again, they took a lot, and he was going deeper than just soul and Motown records. You know, he was talking about stuff like The Faces, Rod Stewart, and, you know, getting those compilations that his older sister would bring home of Motown stuff and immersing himself. You know, I remember thinking that, you know, all these punk rock guys, when I was meeting them, like, that's all they are is punk rockers. They never listen to anything else. And it just couldn't be further from the truth. None of us were born punk rockers. I was listening to Neil Diamond when I was 5 years old, because that's what my parents were listening to. So it's really cool when you get a band together, and we've talked about this before, it's everybody's influences. You start changing band members and you're wondering why the band doesn't feel the same. It's because we're all unique.
I thought another really interesting part of this conversation was the discussion about the integrity of the melody versus the integrity of the lyric. Mm. And maybe you can make a deal with yourself if you're doing both, but when you're, I know in your situation where you're trying to make the lyrics fit to a melody, and that's not always easy to do, especially with consonant sounds and vowel sounds, and just trying to stuff a lyric into a melody doesn't always work. And I'm sure you could have that same battle with yourself. Mm-hmm. If you write a set of lyrics that you really love and you don't want to lose the message of the lyrics, but you're just having trouble making that fit to a melody, and then vice versa. Mm-hmm. You have this melody you love, and no matter what lyric you try to force into it, it just doesn't work. I think that's like a very common problem to have as a songwriter.
Oh, yeah. And everybody interprets words different. So there you are with the lyricist sitting down as a songwriter, and you're coming up with the melodies, and you say, well, I know this word, you know, means a bunch of different things. Can't we find one that's two syllable? And then the lyricist will look at you and say, yeah, but none of those words mean what this word means. This is kind of unique. They kind of mean the same in conversation, but not, they don't mean the same of what I'm trying to articulate in the song. Then your argument's completely blown to pieces. You have nothing to stand on.
Right.
And then, right. And then you're like, well, where do you go from there?
Yep. And also I thought that it was a cool thing to bring up the way that writing songs and getting stuff out of you. And it doesn't just have to be in songwriting form. It could be any sort of art, but that it's a form of therapy. And in my life, and I'm not saying that just because you do art doesn't mean you shouldn't go to therapy too if you feel like you need to or want to, but it's been an outlet for me since before I even knew what therapy meant.
Yeah.
or whatever. So it is one of the fortunate side things of playing music that you have a way to get stuff out and sort of get that therapy through songwriting, through playing music, through performing for other people. You get to release these feelings, and it's just, I don't know, it's always been a really good thing for me.
Heck yeah. And I'll tell you, give me and Chris a follow on Instagram. I'm Less Than Christy. He's at Chris Fafalius. And yeah, go subscribe to my YouTube page too. Lots of great content. Chris is always putting cool stuff up there. And I want to thank this week's guest, a longtime dear friend, awesome musician, can't say enough about him, Duncan Redmonds from the band Snuff. And we'll see you next week.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.